Wisconsin is home to so many wonderful writers, and we always enjoy getting to feature our Wisconsin writers on the show. And today we're lucky to have Kathleen Ernst back with us. She writes both fiction and nonfiction, and for adults and young people alike. And her most recent book in the Chloe Ellefson mystery series is titled The Lightkeeper's Legacy. I finished reading it about a week or so ago. I just love the book. And I'm pretty sure you're going to enjoy it, too. In fact, I'd bet money on it. She's the author of a brand new series of American Girl books as well. And Kathleen, it's always a pleasure.
I'm delighted to be here.
I really enjoyed this. I think it's the best of the, third?
This is the third in the series. And thank you very much. I had a wonderful time working on this book.
The first two are set in Old World, Wisconsin.
That's
so
right.
Maybe you can tell about that a little bit.
Well, the series is about a young woman named Chloe Ellefson, who is a curator at Old World, Wisconsin, the real and wonderful historic site in Waukesha County. And I do plan to keep Chloe anchored at Old World, Wisconsin, but this is the third outing, and I decided it was time to get her a little farther afield, and didn't have any trouble picking where I wanted book three to be. Rock Island.
Well,
off the tip of Door County.
Wow. And talk about why you chose that setting.
Well, Rock Island is just a very, very special place. It's a state park, and it's roadless. So once you take that second ferry from Washington Island to Rock Island, you're really in a place, the type of place that's very difficult to find anymore. It's peaceful and it's beautiful. And it also has a very, very rich human history. And one of the things that it's known for, the oldest light station in Wisconsin, is on the northern tip of the island.
And that, of course, plays a very prominent role. And I think one of the things that I really like about your books, and this one in particular, you really bring out some of the wonderful aspects of the immigrants who populated Wisconsin and their cultures.
I really love doing that. And I especially like to think about all the people who are largely voiceless or invisible. Perhaps they didn't leave a structure behind to remind us of them, or no letters or no handwork survived. So it's fun to sort of try to ferret out what we can and discover the lives of those people and shine a little bit of light on them.
Absolutely. Kathleen Ernst, our guest today, author of her latest book, The Lightkeeper's Legacy. Wonderful book, and I'm certainly highly recommending it to you. If you have a question or comment for her, set on Rock Island. Have you visited Rock Island? What really stuck with you? Do you have Nordic immigrants in your family tree? They play a big part of the book. What did they do for work when they first came to Wisconsin? That would be kind of fun to know about, too. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question, a comment, maybe you got a photo of Rock Island. Love to see that, too, on our Facebook page. That's at The Larry Mueller Show. And Barbara in Oconomowoc is with us by phone, so let's go to Barb. Hi, Barbara. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Barb. Hi, Kathleen. You know me. I'm really excited about this last book, so excited that I ended up staying up to 3 o'clock in the morning to get to the ending. I was up to like 40 pages from the end, and it's wonderful. It shows how you show everything that you've learned and used and how intelligent you are.
Well, thank you, Barb, very much.
Well, it's, you know, I should say that my wife, I gave her the copy of the book, and we traveled. We were in Washington, D.C. for the weekend for 4 days, and I came home yesterday, thankfully, ahead of the storm. But she got her hands on the book, and we had quite waits, you know, in the airport and then on the plane, on the flight back to Minneapolis, and then a wait, and then flight down to Madison. And then she was reading the whole time. And last night, I don't recall exactly what time it was, but she finished the book last night about 8 o'clock, I think. So once you get started, it's hard to put it down.
That's what I like to hear.
Absolutely. Barb, thanks for calling. Appreciate your call. And I should talk a little bit more about it. In this book, you give us a sense of life that immigrants from, well, primarily from Sweden and Norway.
And Denmark.
Denmark. And Iceland in there?
A little bit of Iceland.
A little bit of Iceland in there, too. And what brought them here? And you talk about that in the book.
Well, there are, were wonderful and are wonderful natural resources in our area. And I actually, when I started to write The Lightkeeper's Legacy, I thought I would focus primarily only on the wonderful lighthouse and the stories of the families that lived in the lighthouse, Potawatomi Lighthouse. And then as I learned more about the island's history, I discovered that there was an entire little village, short-lived, on the eastern side of the island, and became fascinated with thinking about the immigrants who came there. And a lot of these people were trying very hard to just get settled in the new world, and there was good money to be made fishing there in Lake Michigan. So a small fishing community that at one time it probably had 200 or 300 people. And today there's no trace left of the fishing village, unlike the lighthouse, which still stands, or the magnificent boathouse, which still stands on the island. And I just found that very, very intriguing.
Yeah, it certainly was. Fred Madison has a comment. Hi, Fred. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Yes, it's an excellent topic. And I, Kathleen Ernst, I like this topic. I do know about Rock Island. My parents, for many years, went to a place just north of Jacksonport, Wisconsin, which you probably know. And the old buildings in Jacksonport, including the Sunrise Inn, which burned down in 1975, those were made of wood. And all of that wood had to come in on boats. And this, I'm talking like 1880, 1885. There, you couldn't get it up. It had to come in on boats. That's what I understand anyway. And my parents used to go to a place which is also now torn down, but it was built around 1890, and all of that wood had to be floated in. This is the story we heard. Now, in stating this, I'm thinking, why couldn't it have been cut down in the neighborhood? But I understand it was floated in. I have one other comment, not to talk too much, but in the Peshtigo Fire, which, as you know, was in that area, and it was 1871, over 1,000 people died. Many of those people, possibly more than half, we don't know their names because they were recent arrivals and everything burned and they were nameless.
It's quite a tragedy.
Yeah. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And actually, that's interesting. They floated why the wood would have been floated in when, I guess the lumber that may have been there might just not have been what they wanted for construction.
That might be it, and I do know that population among Yankees and European people actually came in from the north and then moved down the peninsula, so there weren't really good roads there, and there was a period when most travel and most supplies came by water.
What, maybe talk a little bit about your research on this, because you had... It's kind of research from different angles.
Yeah, I enjoy going at research in as many different ways as I can. And first and foremost, my husband and I have had the pleasure and the great privilege of serving as volunteer docents at Potawatomi Lighthouse for a week at a time for the last 4 years. And as docents, the group that coordinates the docent program, the Friends of Rock Island, have done a wonderful job not only of restoring the lighthouse, but providing docents with good material about the lighthouse history. And then I also worked in the archives and in local historical societies, just trying to dig out as much as I could to get some insights into the people that once lived on the islands. And there are a lot of descendants still on Washington Island and in Door County today, and many of them were as kind and gracious as you could imagine and shared a lot of family stories with me.
So that you were able to kind of weave into the book in a way? Or?
That's right, yeah. There is a historical timeline in the book. There's two timelines. Chloe goes to Rock Island professionally. She's going to stay in the lighthouse and do some research and come up with a furnishings plan and she's looking forward to a peaceful week on the island, and she finds a body instead on her first evening upon arrival. So, of course, her plans for a peaceful weekend go awry. But I found the human history, both in the lighthouse and in the fishing village, so compelling that I chose to create a secondary timeline that's sort of braided with Chloe's. And as readers proceed through the book, they're learning how past and present might collide in many different ways. And so the research that I did, learning not just what people did, but what they ate and the type of handwork that a Danish immigrant woman might have done to remind herself of home, I love sprinkling little tidbits like that into the stories.
Yeah, that makes it a lot of fun to read, for sure. Kathleen Ernst, our guest today, author of several books. She's got three in the Chloe Ellefson series, and the third and most recent is called The Lightkeeper's Legacy. Talking with her today about that. It's set in on Rock Island off the tip of Door County. Looking forward to hearing your questions and comments as we move along today, talking about the area and talking about writing with our guest Kathleen Ernst. Join in at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page. You can post there at The Larry Mueller Show. Judith Sears Poisson, our producer. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you listening in here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here talking with my guest today, Kathleen Ernst, who is author. She's an educator, a social historian. Actually, was a forestry major in
that's
college.
Right. That's right.
Really cool. Got into writing, though, and got into work at the Old World Wisconsin Living History Museum in Eagle, Wisconsin, or that area. And she's got herself a great series of mystery series here with Chloe Ellefson, Historic Sites Mystery Series, and we're having fun talking with her about it. You may have questions or comments. This book, of course, as I mentioned, is set on Rock Island in Door County. I hope you'll join us. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Carolyn in Milwaukee has been waiting here a bit, so let's go to her. Carolyn, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. This is a wonderful program, and it brings back so many wonderful memories. We spent a lot of time on Rock Island in about the 80s, and we had a sailboat, and we would sail way up to the end of Lake Michigan and stop at Rock Island and tie up there for two or three days.
Oh, that sounds delightful.
Yeah, we enjoyed that beautiful boathouse and were able to go inside and look around and walked all the way around the island and saw that lovely lighthouse. So thank you for the good memories.
Thank you for calling.
Thanks a lot. Did you get to the lighthouse, did you say, Carolyn?
Oh, yes. Yes, in fact, in recent years now, that they have restored it. We did get inside and climbed way up to the top, and it's really a nice trip.
Well, you're probably going to want to take a look at this book then.
I certainly will get it. Yes, thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. It is a really cool lighthouse, isn't it?
It is a magnificent building. It's the second structure that was built on that spot, but it was constructed in 1858, and it's a huge, very sturdy structure. And we can only imagine what the local fishing families who were living in tiny cabins or cottages must have thought when they saw this huge stone building going up. And people who camped in Rock Island for many years walked to the northern tip and were very sorry to see it all boarded up because the last lightkeeper left in 1946. There is still a light, but it's automated. And so it's really a wonderful tribute to the citizens group, the Friends of Rock Island, who were able to raise the money and work with the state and just did a magnificent job. And so often when I'm there as a docent, I talk to people who have been coming for many years, and they are just so thrilled to be able now to go inside and take a tour and go all the way up to the light tower.
Let's turn to Cassie in Manitowish Waters next. Hi, Cassie.
Hi. I grew up in Door County and have been to Rock Island several times. I've camped there. I've walked around it. It is very interesting and really a beautiful place. But I was thinking more of my Norwegian ancestors who did come over from Norway. Mainly the reasons my mother said was that there was no opportunity there at all, that they were serfs on a manor and no opportunity for education or ever owning lands, and that's mainly why they came. And they were fishermen and farmers and wheelwrights and many different things. So they had many, and there were so many Olsons, and they were all getting each other's mail and stuff, so they had to actually change their names when they came over because they just, you know, were so many people in the same area.
Yeah.
But it was very interesting and sent some very lonely letters home all about how lonesome they were in the new country and stuff.
Yeah. You have some of those letters? Or
My mother does. They're in Norwegian. I wouldn't be able to do much with them, but she has had someone, translate for her. So
that's a real treasure because so often we don't have letters or tangible things like that. So that really is a wonderful thing for your family.
Mm-hmm. We enjoy it.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Cassie, for calling. Appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.
Cassie mentioned fishing. And, of course, fishing plays a big role in the second sort of part of your storyline, your second storyline, I guess we could call it.
It does. And we can't really think about something like a lighthouse keeper's life without considering the broader context. And certainly it was fishing that brought those early Yankee and European people to Rock Island. They wanted to fish commercially and support themselves, maybe make a little extra so they could get their feet on the ground. It was a very hard thing to do. And the regulations revolving around commercial fishing have been contentious, as I understand it, for well over a century. And that leads to a lot of hard feelings sometimes. What I found looking at the situation both in the 1980s and in the 1880s and in between, everyone wants the same thing. We all want healthy lakes and healthy fish populations. But there was at times a lot of disagreement about how to go about protecting those resources.
Yeah, absolutely. And leads to a lot of tensions, as it does in your book.
Absolutely, yes.
Without getting into too much detail, Rick in Chicago, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, Rick.
Hi, good morning. You asked about visiting the place. I had visited Rock Island 50 years ago when it was still privately owned by Chester Thordeson.
Oh, my.
Who made his money on Transformers, I think it was, in the 20s.
Yeah.
And what was interesting was there were a lot more buildings on the island back then, and it also was an island that was designed around DC current instead of AC current. And when we were there back in 62, we met, I think it was his widow, but she remarried. Her name was Charette something, and had donated all of his books for the University of Wisconsin, the rare book collection, formed the NIDUS for that.
That's wonderful.
Wow.
And there is still on the island.
There's a lot of history there that you may want to mull around in.
There is still on the island a wonderful exhibit that's a testament to Mr. Thordarson's achievements. And his largest building, the incredibly beautiful Viking Hall boathouse, is still standing and welcomes every guest that comes into the main dock.
Yeah, there were a lot of other buildings besides that back in the early 60s. Because there was, he had quite a collection of buildings he built.
Yeah, very cool. Thanks, Rick.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, appreciate
Thank
the
you.
Call very much. We have Ron in Antioch, Illinois, our next guest. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi there, Larry. I have a short story to share with Kathleen. I served as a docent back in 6 years ago. There were six of us there that lived in various different rooms. And like you said, when you get up in the morning, you got to make the room and hide your clothes in the closet so it still looks very authentic.
Yeah.
But on one of the days we were up there, a storm had passed through, and we went up into the lighthouse to watch the end of the storm, and we saw a huge, spectacular rainbow ascend up way up into the sky.
Oh, my.
And one of our group was from Norway. He's actually half Norwegian. And he said, you know what the custom is, don't you? And I said, what do you mean? I don't know what you're talking about. He says, oh, the Scandinavian custom is that when you see a rainbow, somebody's soul has ascended up to Nirvana.
I had not heard that.
You probably are getting, well, some of the Norwegians and the Scandinavians will certainly know that. I didn't at the time. And you're probably ahead of me on this story. When we finally got off the island 2 days later, when we finally got good cell phone service, my my fiance Julie indeed found out that one of her brothers at the age of 42 had dropped dead of a heart attack. And so, oh my goodness.
Oh my goodness, exactly.
When we see rainbows to this day, that crosses our mind. But that was such a special week where we got trained to be able to welcome, you know, any tourists that came by on mm-hmm. the island to talk about the unique heritage of that lighthouse. We are so indebted, aren't we, to those who have restored that lighthouse.
We really are. And they did such a magnificent job.
Oh, yes. Of course, at nighttime, we had to bring in our lanterns. And the guy who was Norwegian was a wonderful reader, and we just pulled some books off the shelf, and he read some different excerpts while we're sipping wine, at candlelight and at lantern light. So that's a very special memory for us.
Oh, thank you for calling. Yeah, thanks, Ron.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Larry, and thank you, Kathleen. I look forward to getting the book so Julie and I both can enjoy reading this.
Terrific.
All right. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. And that was interesting. Were you, when you served as a docent, you and your husband, were just the two of you, or were there others?
We've primarily done it just as the two of us, and we've always been there on opening weekend, and that's Memorial Day, and that gets a little busy, and so our daughter does come up and help us out for Memorial Day weekend. So we have the fun, usually, if weather's cooperative, of having a very busy holiday weekend where we can welcome many guests, and then also some quiet days on the week in between, especially if it's cold or rainy, where a writer with an overactive imagination finds plenty to think about.
Oh, boy. Jack in Milwaukee. Hello, thank you for calling.
Hello.
Yes, and what's on your mind?
I took a tour of it about 18 years ago, and they one of the docents said that there were Japanese hanging gardens that they were bulldozed under after they bombed Pearl Harbor. Is there any truth to that, or is that something I misheard?
I have heard the same stories. I can't say with certainty whether they're true or not, but I know that the Thordarson estate at one time contained some gorgeous gardens, including a lot of Asian-influenced things. And last year, the naturalist showed me there is actually one that survived the bulldozing and probably is unnoticed by many visitors, but a good botanist would be able to spot one Japanese plant still growing.
And they also have pagoda-style buildings, right? The gazebo is styled in the Japanese tradition?
They did, I believe, yes.
Is the gazebo still there?
Not to my knowledge. No, the Viking Hall is still standing, and a couple of other stone buildings, which are beautiful. Most of the other buildings are no longer standing.
Okay. Well, I have to get the book.
All right. Hope you enjoy.
Thanks a lot for calling, Jack. Appreciate your call. Oh, we finally have some open lines and get you on pretty quickly. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Love to hear from you as we talk with Kathleen Ernst, who is the author of The Late Keeper's Legacy, a mystery series, the third one in the Chloe Ellefson series. And by the way, it's a great Facebook post from Denise, who says she's excited to read this, grew up on Washington Island. And a long line of lighthouse keepers in her ancestry. She says, I see this is the third book of the series. Is it necessary to read the first two in order to step into this one?
It is not necessary. Each book in the series does work as a standalone. So if you want to start with The Lightkeeper's Legacy because it has such personal relevance for you, you won't have any trouble. That said, I will mention that there is an ongoing plot arc that moves from book one to book two to book three. So some people prefer to start at the beginning for that reason, but you won't have any trouble.
And all three. You'll enjoy all three, believe me. I'm almost 100% sure you will enjoy them. I certainly enjoyed reading all three, and my wife did as well. And we're looking forward to the next. This is getting ahead of things a little bit, but I assume there's another Chloe Ellefson.
There is. I am working hard at work on Chloe Ellefson number 4 as we speak, and if all goes well, that will be out a year from now. And I have a contract for one more book beyond that, but I also have plans for many more books beyond that.
Okay.
I'm having a lot of fun with the series.
And this one goes back, the one you're working on goes back to Old World?
Actually, the one I'm working on takes Chloe to another and different historic place. And I don't want to talk about that too much just because I am in the middle of it. But
yeah.
I plan to keep Chloe rooted at Old World, Wisconsin, and she will return there and will visit many other historic sites at the same time.
So that's looking
for a nice balance.
Very cool. Dan in Phelps, Wisconsin, thank you for calling.
Dan.
Good morning. Quite a few years ago, probably 20, my daughter and I, and I sailed on the Great Lakes commercially for almost half a century.
Mm.
We camped out there, and they had a tremendous thunderstorm that night, and a lot of people packed up and boogied in to spread their stuff on the Viking Hall floor. We stuck it out, but the next day it was just gorgeous, and we hiked around, and there's a cemetery up there, and I wonder if you know anything. My recollection, and I forgot to take my camera when we went on this walk, but there, my recollection is that there are gravestones in that little bitty cemetery. It's only probably 12 by 15 feet or something. But there's a whole family buried there with the same last name, and obvious sort of from the names and dates. The dates go back into the 1640s, and I wonder if you know anything about that, and I'll listen off the air.
All right.
Well, I'm not familiar with anything that goes back to the 1640s. There are several small cemeteries on the island. The one that's very close to the lighthouse contains the remains of David Corbin, the first lightkeeper, who was there quite early in the 1830s, and also a family that perished near the lighthouse in a terrible storm. They were on a boat. And then also there were some shipwreck victims that were never identified. They washed up on shore, and so they are buried there. In another small cemetery farther south on the island, one of the earliest white families on the island, the Minor family, two young girls died of disease, and they're buried in that cemetery.
Oh, too bad. Thank you very much for calling. Cemeteries, for one reason or another, are interesting places, and I don't know, fun is the right word, but very interesting places
very
to visit.
Very interesting, and there are stories. You know, every gravestone represents a human story.
Yeah, absolutely. Sherry in McHenry, Illinois. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, Sherry.
Hi. I don't really have a question, but all of the background information and all of the history that everybody's calling in with is great. But even if you've never been to any of those places, I love this series.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate that.
It makes us want to go to, you know, like we went to Old World last year and met you when the second book came out. And yeah, so it's not just for the people who already know where they are.
Oh, well, thank you for pointing that out. I hope that I can paint pictures with my words in the stories that will bring a place alive. And I should also mention there's a lot of additional information on my website, which is KathleenErnst.com, including tour guides for people that do wish to visit the places that I'm writing about and photographs and things like that.
I can attest to that because I used the pictures to plan the trip when we went to Old World.
Oh, wonderful. Oh. I'm so glad you found that helpful.
Very much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And you've done, did you do a tour?
Yes, I had the great fun of collaborating with a colleague that I worked with at Old World for many years, Marty Perkins, who is the curator of research there. And has been there since the 1970s, so no one knows Old World, Wisconsin the way Marty does. And he and I collaborated and provided two behind-the-scenes Chloe Ellison tours last summer.
That sounded like so much fun.
They were great fun, and they were fundraisers for the site, and people who had read the books had the fun of seeing the buildings that they'd read about in the stories, and a few people came who hadn't read the books yet, and they had the fun of being introduced in, on the ground where the scenes took place. So we all had a marvelous time.
Anybody looking for any of the characters from the book?
Well, I occasionally get questions about that, but of course, everyone in the books is entirely fictional.
Okay. Sharon in Appleton. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi there. I also have worked in history museums, and right now I just think you're living my dream life, museum person turned mystery writer.
Ah.
So I'm just wondering if you could talk about how your work as a historian has informed your, it has helped you create mysteries for your readers.
Oh, what an interesting question. The whole time, I worked at Old World Wisconsin as a curator for 12 years, and at that time I was writing a lot. I was not yet publishing books, but I learned a lot of things. I learned a lot of hands-on everyday activities and what things, you know, how to milk a cow, how to bake as a bohemian woman would have baked. And those kind of practical details and sensory experiences certainly make their way into my stories. But it also helped me learn how to do good research. And I'm very grateful for that because I work really hard to provide the best historical base that I can for all of my stories.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you.
Oh, thank you and good luck.
Thank you very much for calling. I appreciate your call as well. There's lots of great calls today. I'm really liking every one of them, as is almost always the case. Pretty much always the case, as a matter of fact. The story itself, there's one of she's kind of got a boyfriend.
That's right.
Relke
McKenna.
Relke McKenna. And he shows up in the he's been in all three of the books, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, he has. Relke, I love the character of Relke. I knew from the beginning that I wanted to have a second point of view character. Relke McKenna is a local cop in Eagle, and he met Chloe in her first adventure, Old World Murder. And they are slowly figuring out whether they might have some kind of a future together. They're very different people. And so they're kind of bumping into some corners along the way. Relke does have some growing to do, but he has a big heart, and his heart's in the right place. And even though Chloe went up to the island really hungry for some solitude and some time alone, which Relke didn't entirely understand, she's pretty glad to see him when he does arrive.
Crystal in Humboldt. Hello. Thank you for calling.
Hey, Crystal.
Hi, that's Humbert.
Oh, Humbert. Sorry.
Yes, that's okay. I wanted to tell you about my grandfather who came over here from Denmark when he was 16. And he already had two brothers over here in southern Wisconsin with a family who had sponsored them, and they also sponsored him. And when he came to finally got to Wisconsin, he came through Ellis Island, and he took a train, and while he was at Ellis Island, they gave him a lunch, which he had his very first piece of apple pie, and he loved it ever since.
I love that story.
He loved apple pie and watermelon, and anyway, he settled in southern Wisconsin down by a little teeny town called Burton and between Cassville and Potosi, Wisconsin.
Okay.
And he started a church down there along with some of my other relatives and some other people in the area. And when he came over, he was going to take the Titanic, but thank God he didn't.
Wow.
Anxious to get here. He took an earlier ship.
Oh, my.
So, but anyway, he came to Wisconsin on a train, and I suppose they picked him up at the train station and everything, but he lived to be 2 months from 101.
Wow. Oh, my goodness.
And what an experience for a 16-year-old.
Right. Wow. Right. He had quite a life.
Oh, man. So 101.
Wow.
Yeah. That was my grandfather.
Oh, Crystal.
That was what I was raised with.
You were a lucky gal.
I know.
Thank you
so much. Thanks so much for
sharing.
Yeah,
thanks so much for sharing that. Isn't that great? The history, I think a lot of people are going to enjoy the two stories. I mean, there really are. You had me wondering, okay, what's going to happen? Who's doing what to whom in the old story, and who in the heck is involved in the murder in the other story? You had me running around in circles, and
this is good.
I never did figure it out until the end, and I didn't figure it out that until I read what your ending was, which was a nice, almost right at the end, which was a real nice surprise. Always such a great pleasure to talk with you. And are you doing any readings, by the way? Or
The next thing that I have coming up, I will be doing a reading at the Wisconsin Book Festival on Thursday, November 8th. I'm on a panel with other people who were recently honored by the Council for Wisconsin Writers. Other than that, I do have a lot of things scheduled, and I would point people towards my website. My calendar is there.
Yeah, and the website again, the address?
Is www.kathleenernst.com.
KathleenErnst.com. And Kathleen, thank you so much.
It's been my great pleasure.
Look forward to that next Chloe Ellefson mystery. Let me know when it's coming.
I sure will. I'm having a lot of fun with that one, too.
Okay. Appreciate that very much. Kathleen Ernst, our guest. And the characters in her latest book deal with the power and danger that storms brought to Rock Island. And coming up next, we'll talk with our weather guys about weather, Hurricane Sandy, what conditions cause such a fierce storm. And while there's a lot more technology available now than there was for those 19th century fishermen we've heard about, we'll hear about a worrisome gap in satellite technology that might affect our weather predictions. Lots of interesting and important information to share. So stay tuned right here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.